This is URN.
The Film Show Breakdown.
Hello, good evening, happy Friday everyone, welcome to your weekend, welcome to the film show. Now we're all starting to stress out and lose our heads, all of us students, but it's time to take an hour now to talk about film. And Jamie, do you want to take away, it's still Oscar season, what film are we doing this week?
Well, we're starting off with Shape of Water by Guillermo del Toro. It's a bit like Beauty and the Beast with a fish, is the simplest way to put it. That's not really doing it credit. It's set in the 50s, isn't it, would you say? 50s or 60s?
It's the 60s. It's like a sort of Cold War.
And it really captures that spirit really well, I'd quite say. And it's set in a science facility, and a woman who works there starts to build a connection with a merman, would you say?
So basically...
It's deliberately a very bizarre premise.
I really wanted to get a clip for this film, but... the lead character, played by Sally Hawkins, is mute, and so a lot of her scenes that she's either signing, so it's almost a sort of silent film Chaplin-esque performance, because she carries the entire film. And basically what happens is she works for an area of the government, and they've managed to capture a merman, a fishman. If you picture back to the 1950s Creature from the Black Lagoon, it's that sort of character. Whereas rather than him terrorising everyone, a weird love story begins to unfold. We talked about this last week with Valentine's Day, but do you want to take away a bit
about... Well, Guillermo del Toro clearly has this obsession with exploring this other world atmosphere, well, set on our own planet, but this, you know, there's something else is out there kind of attitude. But he does it in some ways, whether it could be good or whether it can be bad. And it's very Lovecraftian in its sort of like surrealness. But the fact, if you look at some of his other films, like Hellboy, there's another merperson, another fish person in Abe. And in this one, of course...
How interesting.
In this one, of course, the merperson is also good. But of course, in other films such as Pan's Labyrinth, the other world of creatures have been evil or neutral. So it's very clearly has this obsession with it. And I think it's very interesting to see played out on film.
So have you seen Pan's Labyrinth?
No, I really want to.
Okay, so for people who haven't seen it, Pan's Labyrinth is again a bit like Shape of Water, where it's very mythical. There are creatures and beings that only exist in our minds that come into play and are very impactful on screen. And though they appear sort of scary and intimidating, as many are, they actually have this sort of tender side, this human side to them, which is almost more human than the humans in the film, which I think if we're talking about Shape of Water, can you kind of see that parallel as well, Jamie?
Oh yeah, that's pretty perfect actually. So he, in his past explored, he takes this scary idea and gives it another dimension, would
yeah,
you say?
Yeah, exactly like that. So it's a really interesting film, and I can see why it's getting the praise it deserved. For me, there was just something missing. I understood it completely. And fair play to Guillermo del Toro. We've got to give him credit. Much like Jordan Peele in Get Out, he's very explicit in the messages he's trying to connote and what he's trying to say. It comes across very clearly, like there's this whole use of the colour green. Water is prevalent in almost every scene in one way or another. There's deep and rich meaning, but for me, I don't know, there was something about the story that just didn't grab me in the same way it's grabbing other people, so I'm wondering if it's just me.
Well, one thing I want to mention is it's set in the past, but it applies some very modern sensibilities to it, I would say. Maybe that, even though it's more interesting for a modern audience, especially in such time of political conflict, to see it like that, but maybe it doesn't help in world building. In building this world, sometimes it can feel a bit like a stage play. So you're seeing this story act out against a very aesthetically pleasing, but maybe a little undeveloped background.
No, that's interesting. I can see what you mean about a stage play, but maybe that's the sort of 50s, 60s air you're getting from, its's scenery and it's...
You mentioned earlier that the main characters are mute. That's definitely supposed to be a deliberate throwback to silent film. So maybe that... I'm not giving enough credit for its accuracy, but I do like that concept.
That's the thing with me. My problem with Shape of Water is I can completely understand why it's a good film. Or more, rather than say understand, I completely appreciate why it's a good film. There was just something about
it. It's very well made. I said to you in a message, I said, it's good enough for... The story is good enough for the effort that was put into it, so that's justified, because a lot of effort went to special effects and makeup. The story works for what it is, but there is something missing in terms of, like, it does feel very simple, almost, like...
Yeah, you're starting to come around to it, though, because we both came out and we were a bit kind of unsure about it, kind of umming and ahhing. We agreed it was good.
Yeah.
But you...
It's definitely
you
a well-made film.
So it must have sort of resonated with you a bit, or it must have at least stayed with you a little bit for
yeah,
you to...
Yeah, I'm definitely going to watch it again
reconsider
at some point.
It.
I'm definitely going to watch it again at some point. I don't think it should win the Oscar. I do actually agree that it should have been nominated. I see why. It's definitely got all the pieces in place.
Yeah, no, I think it deserves Oscar nominations. I think if it wins a couple Oscars over some of the other films in the category, I may be disappointed, but I understand it. It's funny, Cinefix, the American YouTube channel, we haven't come across Cinefix before. Check them out, they're really interesting. They did this whole series of going through each film and does it deserve to win Best Picture, and what they said about Shape of Water is it deserves credit for getting made entirely, because its story, when you think about it, when it actually boils down, it's actually quite out there and maybe a bit unsettling. It's a woman having a romantic affair with a...
It's almost if he set himself a goal of taking this ridiculous concept that might make people uncomfortable and actually trying to make it more relatable and to make it actually sympathetic. So yeah, I think he definitely did that, if that's what he set out to do.
So we've got the Oscars on Sunday. We are going to hijack the culture show and we're going to be talking Oscars on Sunday. But your final thoughts in consideration of Shape of Water, thinking about the Oscars, where do you think Shape of Water stands?
Well, we are going to be voting on what we think should win the individual categories, aren't
we, Francis?
We are.
We're doing the Film Show Awards, which will be happening in 2 weeks' time.
Hoping to get as many people, many of our panelists who come on the show to vote in.
No, everyone's voting.
Everyone's
got
to.
There's
going to
be some severe backlash from me. We're keeping things British now, moving away from the Oscars, because we've talked and talked and talked about them, but it's time to do something different now. So Jamie, last night we were given the opportunity to interview two documentary makers, which was a first for us this year anyway, for
yes,
the film show.
Yes, we did. They made a documentary called Who Killed British Cinema, exploring what has happened to the British film industry over the past, 50-100 years?
So they believe that the British film industry was destroyed under Margaret Thatcher's government when they got rid of the Edie levy and
around
the film quota,
right?
Around 1983. And during the 70s, all our film companies that we had in Britain began to slowly fade away. And what we got instead was our film industry, as they claim, became a service industry where British filmmakers, British filmmakers, British actors, everyone involved, were given a wage, but nothing else. So it became a service.
In Britain, we do have stuff like Pinewood Studios in London, but they make the very clear point that these places are just spaces for hire.
It's just space, yeah. It's a rental.
Yeah, they don't distribute films, they don't really produce them. They're hired out by the American studios to come over and use British technicians and so on.
So again, it's a service industry. So it was really interesting talking to these two. It's Robin Dutta and Vinod Mahindru, two filmmakers from Birmingham who I don't even know if they could believe it, but they managed to get this documentary made, and I got the opportunity to watch it, and I thought it was absolutely fascinating. Really, really interesting documentary. And they also had the assistance of Jonathan Gems, who worked on the screenplay of Mars Attacks, to name a few, and he featured in the documentary quite heavily, and it was really insightful. Okay, so your documentary itself is called Who Killed British Cinema. So if we're going to get our claws into that, what exactly makes a film British?
This is a really interesting question, because we had to debate this and try and find out exactly what the definition was. But in the end of the day, it's quite clear. It's all about sensibility. It's all about who's making the decisions. It's all about where the profit is. So, for instance, you've got Warner Brothers and all these Warner Brothers, distributors who are in control of Harry Potter. Now, all the decisions in Harry Potter were made from Hollywood executives and a Hollywood studio. They weren't made by a British studio. We simply don't have one. So again, it's all about the sensibility and, you know, looking at a film and deciding whose stories are being actually told in the film. Like, you know, someone in Liverpool and someone in Sunderland or Nottingham, they're probably not getting their stories told because this is not what they think the American audience or the British audience want. But again, as Ben Kingsley has said in our film, you know, Americans and people all around the world are intrigued by our stories and by our lives, and they want to see films that are intrinsically and indigenously British. So I suppose that's one of the biggest problems.
Are you concerned at how American media production companies represent British culture? Are you concerned it may be misleading?
Yeah, definitely, because I would slightly disagree with the Americans representing our culture, because I think what they reproduce a tourism film.
So like a postcard.
It's a bit like you'll find the sort of what I call painting by numbers types of British so-called films where, you know, it's kind of like pandering to a tourism sort of interest, you know, the royal family, you know, the upper middle class, you know, the stiff upper lip. It's not really representative of the diverse range of cultures and ideas and landscapes that are within our shores. They are really just stereotypical sort of fodder for essentially the American public. It's not really reflective of who we are. And that's, in that sense, Britain is not being represented by cinema.
But think about this, Francis, that culturally, we now have Halloween, we now have American football, we now have, you know, the baseball caps and, you know, all these kind of American cultural ideologies in Britain that are not British. You know, people are going to proms now. You know, when I went to school, we never had proms. But it's such an American thing. I don't understand how it's being allowed, but people aren't seeming to notice.
So if you think about the films of David Lean or Powell and Pressburger, for example, do you feel like these films just don't exist anymore? But the other question is, do you think if there was the potential for them to exist, they could exist today in the culture and the environment we now live in the 21st century?
I think they could exist. I mean, I think someone like Powell, you know, was a believer. You know, so he would have ideas, and he would follow those ideas with a passion, regardless of fashion or regardless of what other people were saying. And that's a commitment to being brave and courageous and having an outlet. If British ideas always have to be subservient to a foreign interest, then by definition, we're never going to produce those ideas. We're never going to produce the next David Lean. And that's essentially what's at risk. I think to answer your part of your question, are those films or potential films, are they applicable to today's market audience? I say emphatically yes.
This film that you've made, like, it's clearly an exposure to something. Is that correct? Like, it's more than just the documentary you're promoting. It's almost like the movement itself. So what is the next step, do you think, now that this documentary is out there and hopefully people are going to consider seeing it? And you had so many people behind you, so many filmmakers, so many people involved. I'm sure it wasn't easy to get all of them involved. They may have taken a bit of persuasion, but it seemed like so many were on board, like so many filmmakers like Ken Loach and Sir Ben Kingsley, who's seem to be so impactful in your documentary when I watched it. What is the next step now there are these British filmmakers sort of grounded in your movement?
Well, I think first of all, there needs to be a shift of consciousness in respect of what the cinema is. It's like Robin alluded to, it's potential, it's important, it's cultural relevance. There needs to be a complete shift of consciousness as to how important one's indigenous culture is. I'm sure I'm no different to you and your audience, young students who like American films. I like American films. I grew up on American films. American films are fantastic. But we also shouldn't sell ourselves short from a British perspective. You know, we've got incredible talents here and incredible ideas here. And you know, it's almost... we're not allowing some of these very cerebral ideas that we will naturally have to come to the foreground and to be embraced.
This is URN.
The Film Show Breakdown.